from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over! The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Hey, welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 98. If you're listening on drop day, it's July 18th. We are still smack dab in the middle of the All-Star break, but we could not talk about this team and talk about baseball and talk about the Red Sox. I mean, you try to give us a break and Jaren Duran goes out and wins the All-Star Game MVP. But before we get into it, this is the official podcast of Bull Rides and Crappy Anthems, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button, whether you're on the Odyssey app, Apple, or Spotify. Rate us 5 stars. It helps us out a ton. You can also check it out on YouTube or on the WEEI channel. You could check out our Playtessie playlist within that channel. Hit the thumbs up on the videos. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. And as always, check us out on the socials at Playtessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Pat and here with Joe filling in for Sammy in this one. Guys, it's crazy. You try to give us an All-Star break, which is what, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday without games. And over the weekend before the All-Star break, Roman Anthony wins the skills competition and Kyle Teal hits 2 doubles in the minor league All-Star portion of things. And then on Tuesday, Jaren Duran goes out and takes Hunter Green to freaking Jupiter, wins the All-Star game MVP, deservingly so. There was no one else who even held a candle to Jaren Duran on the winning team. If the NL won, obviously you could have given it to Shohei. But life has been really, really, really good for Red Sox fans lately. And I know we keep talking about what we could and couldn't see coming. But for the Red Sox to be one of the teams making the most noise in Major League Baseball right now, to steamroll into the All-Star break, and then for Jaren Duran to continue things and just like not let that momentum stop at all, Red Sox fans are just, I will not say they're on cloud nine because I hate that expression. Cloud nine is one of my least favorite things ever, but Red Sox fans just continue to be, to have that. The celebration continues. It's so great.
It's really, when you think about All-Star weekend, you could say the Red Sox had the best weekend out of all of it. It started off the bat, as you said, Roman Anthony showcasing his skills. And then you're thinking on the game Tuesday, that it's not going to be much because Tanner Houck comes and he looks nothing like the ace that Red Sox fans have come accustomed to. Two hits, and then Shohei Ohtani takes him to the moon with that shot. And then Jarren Duran, in his very first All-Star at-bat, crushes one to right and obviously deserves him the MVP. As you said, you can't think of anyone else that came close to it. But I would say, at least from a Red Sox side of things, in terms of all the teams that were represented at All-Star break, they had the best break because their best hitter, one of their best hitters, launches it, gets MVP, and their future was showcased with Roman Anthony and Kyle Teal, who had a great futures games with two doubles. So Red Sox, big winners out of this time off.
Yeah, I mean, another part of All-Star weekend, a top five talent fell to them at 12 in the draft. So just everything coming up, Sox. Teal went off. Roman wins the skills competition. I'm so damn happy for Jarren Duran. He's been kind of getting national media attention. Like in series previews, they're highlighting him every now and then when they tweet out like the extra base hit or the war list. He's always on there. But I feel like he was given, or he made the most of the stage that he had this weekend. The world, the baseball world, was just introduced to Jarren Duran. I was really hoping that he was going to get a single that second at bat and just run the bases like a madman. Didn't happen, but I will gladly take the home run and All-Star game MVP.
The way that I watch All-Star games with my team's players in them, it's just like, just get a hit. So when you're up, just get a hit. So I can just, that's just what I want to see. And he got up there and he hit the ball, and it's just like my mind couldn't even comprehend what I saw, even though like we've been seeing Jarren Duran do stuff like this all season. It was just really cool. And like, obviously, as Red Sox fans, we know how far he's come. We remember 2 years ago watching him lose that fly ball off the bat of Raimel Tapia for an inside the park grand slam. We watched him like practically try to fight fans in Kansas City and just like truly show that he wasn't ready for the big league stage back then. And for him to come all this way and just become, in my opinion, such a marketable star for this league that they really should take advantage of. This is a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve. He is completely genuine. There's nothing fake about Jarren Duran. He is electric in every facet of the game, both in terms of who he is as a person, but how he plays. Pat, you talked about it. You wanted him to get a single just to see him put on a show on the base paths in the All-Star game. So this is a guy who can put on a show by hitting the ball out of the ballpark as he did in his first at bat. This is a guy who can put on a show running the bases, and I would argue does that better than anyone in baseball, including Elly De La Cruz. This is a guy who it's honestly doing him a disservice to pull the old, oh, he's an improved defender. Like, that's what we should say about Raffy. Is Raffy's an improved defender. Jarren Duran is a great defender. So he is everything in all facets of the game. He is as marketable from a personality standpoint as you can be. Like, let's compare it to like an Aaron Judge who goes out there and, you know, obviously from an appearance standpoint, he's in New York, like, and his name is Judge, like, marketable in that sense. But like, in terms of the things he says, it's very cookie cutter. It's very PR conscious. He says the right things. Jarren Duran is authentically himself. The league should be taking full advantage of that, I hope, moving forward, as long as Jaren's comfortable with it. Because obviously, like, the league tried to market Mike Trout for years and he just really wasn't having it, so they couldn't do it. With Jarren, like, as far as he wants the league to take him, they should be taking him.
Yeah, I mean, everything you said and more. Like, he's a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve. He's very outspoken about mental health. Like, he already has the initiatives in place. Young, he's on the younger side. He's finally kind of coming into himself, developing, becoming a star. Now is the chance. Sox, MLB, whoever it may be, you got to market this guy.
So yeah, I have a question for you.
The beauty of it is the authenticity, is that he literally will outwardly show you. I mean, I shouldn't say outwardly, but he'll put it under his jersey. He'll put it in his suit jacket, which, by the way, his suit was sick on the red carpet. He'll literally tell, he has the motivational message of fuck him literally on his wrist, on his body, on his suit. And I think initially when it was after the walk-off and MLB kind of gave him a warning on that one, and he just said, yeah, whatever, I'll just keep doing it, but keep it hidden. I think this was sort of not an initiation sort of thing from the MLB, but it was kind of just like sort of a test to be like, okay, what kind of guy are we going to get him if we give him, if we just give him a little nudge, being like, just be careful, be careful, be careful. And he's taking the bull by the horns. And I agree with both of you guys. This is a guy who can carry at least the spotlight from a Boston standpoint and the MLB to the next level if he keeps up this kind of talent.
Well, this is, and this, it's all true. Everything we're saying is objectively true. But he's such a fascinating case because every time a guy has a breakout like this, the next discussion is, well, when are you going to extend him, right? And, you know, David Ortiz called Jaron Duran the future of the Red Sox. I don't think that's some crazy statement to say. Like, he's the present and he's locked up for the next 4.5 years. He's also the future of the team. But is he the future of the team is the next question. We talk about extensions, and like before the season, we heard a lot about Casas. Obviously, Bayo gets done. Heard a lot, like a little bit about Willier. Sedan Rafaela gets done. We didn't hear a lot about Duran. And I think part of the reason for that is because his current deal expires, or he'll be a free agent entering his age 32 season, which obviously that's on the older side. Part of that is because it took him a couple of years to really break out. You know, when you're up and down in the majors and minors, you don't accumulate that year of service time. So last year was his first full year of service time. Would you extend Jaron Duran knowing how old he's going to be when the contract expires? Joe, you've got a face on. I'll start with you.
It's a tricky subject because you want to. You really, really want to, because you feel like what this guy has done, what Duran has done, is something you want to have basically until he's ready to retire. But to me, I'm just not there at that point because this is his first year of breaking out. We've seen the potential basically since he's been called up with the base running, and we're now seeing his power. We're now seeing how good of a fielder he can be. The thing is, though, this has got to be sustained, at least in my opinion. I want to see multiple seasons of this. And granted, you know, the outliers is giving Brian Bayo the deal, giving Sedan Rafaela the deals, but they're considerably younger than Duran. I just feel like I need to see it more on a consistent basis. And the closer the free agency comes and he gets a little bit up there in age, I want to see if he's still giving that kind of production. Because even if he gets to 32, you know, he might still be fast, but just not as fast. So those doubles that are normally singles that he extends might not come to fruition when he gets to 30, 31, so be it. So I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, I personally wouldn't extend him. I think 32 is the kind of perfect age to have him until as of right now, just because, and Joe kind of alluded to it, he's not one of those guys where his skills are going to age gracefully and he's going to slide into like this power hitting role. Like he's not a real power hitter. He's an extra base hit guy because of the speed. He's at 10 home runs so far this year. Defense is still really good. But once you get beyond that 32-ish, we've seen it before. I mean, you look at Ellsbury and the Yankees. Injuries obviously played a factor there, but without the speed, the extra base is kind of going. If you can't hit for power, you're essentially just a contact hitter. And if you're extending him for big money, you need way, way, way more than that, especially beyond age 32 season. So personally, I wouldn't do it.
The thing is, when you extend a guy so far away from their free agent year, you're making a bet. Like they placed a bet, like they extended Sedan, and he could not have had an OPS over like 630 when they did that. Brian Bayo was coming off, you know, he had a good first half last year, but not a good second half. You're making bets. And I would bet anything I have on Jaron Duran for the next 4 years. That is a beautiful thing to have in your organization. This guy is the spark plug of this team for now and moving forward. But we've seen the speed thing before with like they paid Carl Crawford. He was a demon on the base pass, murdered them. And then look what happened. The Yankees paid Jacoby Ellsbury. He slowed down a little bit. Look what happened. It's not to say Jaron Duran can't do it. And it's also not to say that they can't pay him when he does hit free agency. But I just, like, there are guys who are like, when the big three come up, if they have a good, you know, first showing, they're all super young. I would bet on those guys moving forward. It's hard to bet on a speed guy entering age 32 season, and it's nothing against Jaren Duran. It's just the circumstance. I want him here forever, but unless you get that deal on like a unless it's super team friendly,
The beauty of it now, when you're talking team friendly, is that he's 28 now, and by the end of his contract, he's going to be 32. So there's still plenty of not only evaluation time, but time for him to even get better than what he already is. Like, maybe he could become even more powerful. Maybe he can become even more of an elite defender. There is time. There is time. You don't want to take that gamble too early. This will come up again, and it'll get more serious of a conversation in 2 years. We don't need to be talking about it when he still has 3.5 left on his current contract.
And you know what, Joe? In 2 years, the conversation is going to get so much more complicated. And like, I'll lead this into the draft talk, because we talk about how stacked the Red Sox are from an offensive standpoint in the system. And you can look at the outfield right now. Like, let's put Ref Snyder aside, because I think he's only under contract for one more year after this year. You've got Duran, you've got Rafael, you got Abreu. But you got Roman Anthony coming. Oh, and you have Christian Campbell. He's like an outfielder. He's both.
York, who's playing left.
York is playing left field. You've got Miguel Blaise, who's in the lower minors. Oh, wait. Now in the first round, they just draft Braden Montgomery, who, had he not gotten hurt, that's a guy who's a top five pick in the draft. He's arguably maybe the most talented player in the draft. That's a guy who's going to move fast once he's healthy, and now he's in the conversation. So you've got a lot of guys coming, and it's not to say I prefer any of those guys over Jaren Duran, because there are almost no players I prefer today over Jaren Duran. It's just the conversation of who would I prefer today, Jaren Duran versus X, Y, and Z, is a different conversation than who would I prefer in the year 2030, Jaren Duran versus X, Y, Z. And you can have both, but at some point, and like, we can segue this into like, the Red Sox are going to have some decisions to make. They used 14, it's either 13 and a half or 14, depending on how you look at the two-way guy. They used the majority of the picks in this draft on pitchers. They're clearly making a conscious effort to rebalance the system in terms of pitchers versus hit. Like, their offense in the system is honestly probably the best in the game, maybe the second best behind Baltimore. You can make an argument. Pitching, it still lags. They had a breakout star in Luis Perales. He gets Tommy John. So like, not back to square one, because he's still there, but you're just not going to see him for a while. The Red Sox are going to have some decisions to make. And the Jaren Duran one is years down the road. They're going to have decisions to make as soon as now, as soon as this offseason, because I don't think Roman Anthony is going to be in the minor leagues by the All-Star break next year. So we just said it before. Rob Ref Snyder is in the equation now. So you've got obviously him, but you've got Duran, you've got Abreu, you've got Rafaela. Now you got Anthony. And we don't even know if Tyler O'Neill will be back. So there are decisions to be made. And it's interesting, because you got the trade deadline coming up. If you wanted to, you could take a big plunge. I don't know. I don't think they're necessarily in need of the big plunge. I don't know if they're ready for the big plunge. Feel free to agree or disagree with that. I don't know. That could be a me thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the big plunge is more deserved for when the big three are either right on the cusp of up or up. I think if you kind of empty the clip right now on a trade, like a Crochet or a Scooble or one of those guys, and you kind of there's guys who have top 100 potential in the farm right now, and we'll kind of get to that later. But if you empty the clip now, that's a big gamble. Especially if you keep the big three come up. If Blaze and Cespedes don't pan out, you're looking at what? Montgomery is your only top 100 guy at that point. Like, that's kind of scary. So I think right now you just add where you need to, right on the margins, right-handed bat, starting pitcher, nothing crazy. Keep the big three intact, ideally probably the top five or six intact, and then see how the season ends. And from there, you manage where you're kind of overloaded, middle infield and outfield.
So what is the circumstance has to happen for you to take that big plunge? Because I feel like, and I was listening to the radio, and like, obviously, you know, all due respect, I find that the radio personalities in this town don't watch all the games, and that's not a shot. Like, obviously, like, you have to love baseball to watch all the games, so I get it. But a lot of the people from the outside looking in say, wow, this Red Sox team's on fire. Wow, this Red Sox team has been the hottest team in baseball for months. This is the team that has the best record in baseball. On drop day, 2 months ago to the day, they have the best record in baseball. So a lot of people are saying, why do the people who cover this team say they're not ready for that plunge? When are they going to be ready for the plunge? And it's such an interesting question, because Pat, you kind of alluded to it before. You make the big plunge when the big three come up and prove that they're legitimate MLB contributors, because when that happens, you'll have like one hole. It'll be in the pitching, or it'll be in the rotation, or maybe two holes. You need a right-handed bat. You got to reshift the organization. But right now, as great as this all looks, you don't want to make that big move too soon. If you get a guy with a year and a half of control now, that means he finishes out this year with you, and then he goes next year. The big three are probably not going to be legitimate MLB impact players until their second year. At least you can't assume that they're going to be anything like that before their second year. So we're looking at like 2026 is our first like true all-in season. So any big plunge you make, in my opinion, needs to be a plunge that helps you in that year. If you make a big plunge before that year, you're limiting your World Series potential. That's just the way I see it.
Well, you also have to define what big plunge is. I mean, obviously, big plunge would be going for it and making a big addition and making sacrifices you normally wouldn't make. I feel like for this year, there aren't those guys where you can definitely say, yes, the Red Sox will sacrifice. You know, obviously, the big three are off, but anyone after that, they would sacrifice to go after a big name. Like, you know, respect to Garrett Crochet, but he's not the big fish. You know, we're looking at sort of an established player. Like, the conversation about big plunge would be going after Pete Alonso or Vlad Jr. or Corbin Burns with the new report that's coming out from Ken Rosenthal. That necessarily is big plunge, at least in my eyes.
There's also a difference between big plunge financially versus big plunge prospect-wise. Because financially, like if they take, obviously Corbin Burns is not getting traded, but Ken Rosenthal, as you just said, Joe, said that he's just not going to return to Baltimore next year, which I found surprising as hell. Like, I figured Baltimore just got new owners. They, as soon as those new owners purchase the team, they make this trade for an ace. You're going to lock that guy up. I guess that's not the case. So Corbin Burns, I guess, is going to be on a new team next year. They kind of, and his context for that was, this is why the Orioles need to acquire a controllable starting pitcher. Now he's alluding to Garrett Crochet, Tarek Skubal. But the Orioles obviously have a system where they can afford to do that. You have these infielders, and like, obviously you look around their infield, and like particularly at shortstop with Gunnar Henderson, and like, you're going to have Jackson Holliday come up and he's going to be like a second baseman. It's like, Sam Bassello. Catching prospect. Guess what? They've got Adley Rutschman, the best catcher in baseball. So they've got the okay. Let me try.
Well, the idea also is looking at expectations.
Let me try to explain why the Red Sox, because I had a buddy texting me today who was like, why is the Red Sox situation any different than Baltimore's? You look at all these prospects, they're great prospects. The difference, like, it's like, and the context is why can they trade Jackson Holliday, and the Red Sox can't trade Marcelo Meyer. The reason, and I don't think they should trade Jackson Holliday, but the reason that the Orioles have prospects that are expendable is because they've got young, controllable guys at the big league level at those positions that are blocking a lot of these prospects. Whereas the Red Sox, Marcelo Meyer has a clear slot that he's going to fit into. Kyle Teal has a slot that he's going to fit into. They're going to make way for Roman Anthony. Like, these guys have role, like they are going to come up and they're going to play. Whereas the Orioles, it's like Heston Kjerstad keeps getting kicked up and down because they just have nowhere to play him. They have to trade these guys. That's the situation the Red Sox are going to be in when the big three come up. When the big three come up, and now we're talking about like Yoelan Cespedes, Miguel Blaze, like maybe even Brayden Montgomery. I don't know. Like, these next wave of prospects after the big three, a lot of those guys could be blocked. It's when guys are blocked, that's when they become expendable.
So I did some digging, and we've talked about it not in depth recently, but there's a real chance here that over the next year and a half, the Sox could have, what do we say, 8 or 9 guys in the top 100 or have top 100 potential right now. You know, Marcelo will be up, Teal will be up, Rowan will be up. But over the next year and a half, you have Meyer, Teal, Anthony, Campbell, Montgomery. Baseball America loves Nick York right now, so keep him in mind. Luis Perales was a top 100 guy before his injury. Miguel Blaze was a top 100 guy before his injury. He's getting his footing back. And Yoelian Cespedes has been a man on fire up until he got hurt. That right there is 9 guys with top 100 potential over the next year and a half. And just to remind everybody, in 2021, so 3 years ago, okay, the Orioles had, I believe it was four top 100 guys. The top 100 guys for the Orioles at the time were Adley, Grayson Rodriguez, Heston Kjerstad, Ryan Mountcastle. Worth noting, guys who are not in the top 100, much like a lot of the guys I just mentioned for the Red Sox: Gunnar Henderson, Jordan Westberg, Dean Kramer, Kyle Bradish, Kobe Mayo. Like, these are all Sam Bisalo. Like, these are guys who, just like a lot of the Sox guys, come in either 18, 19 years old. They're, oh yeah, they have some upside. They might be pretty good. 2 years later, the top 100 guys. That's kind of the position the Sox are in right now. You have your Adley and you have your Marcelo. Like, you have those guys. So a year from now, a year and a half from now, they're going to be in the same exact scenario that the Orioles are in right now, where they're going to have plenty of depth to deal from because guys are going to be blocked.
And that's how you're going to have to, and just based off of the Red Sox history of how they view paying pitchers, it feels like that's going to be the crop that they use to get whoever the next controllable pitcher is. And I don't necessarily, I'm not going to sit here and say that that's Garrett Crochet or Tarek Skubal, whatever. Like, in the offseason, these Marlins guys, like, when the Sox played the Marlins, they were throwing Joe Dickhead at the Sox. And, like,
would you call me?
Okay, Jim Dickhead getting thrown at the Sox. But they've got all these guys like Sandy Alcantara, like, that's a guy who could get traded, and that's a beast. They've got a rotation full of these guys. Who knows, like, how healthy Jesus Luzardo will be. Yuri Perez, I'm sure they won't trade, but they've got tons of guys, and they'll be open for business. There's going to be pitching that comes available. The Red Sox just have to time it right. And the way you can make these moves without it hurting you is to continue to just develop more. You can't lose sight. You can push for the today when the time is right, but you can never do it at the full expense of tomorrow, because if you do it at the full expense from tomorrow, it hurts you today too. That, like,
right.
Rule one is you have to have it coming at all times. When it stopped, that's what's caused this several year rebuild, was because they had, if you look back at the Red Sox top prospects from like 2019, when it was like Michael Chavis and like Bobby Dalbec and Brian Mata, and like that was it. And like, I know, like, I think Casas and Duran were in there, but like, they were not necessarily high, or Casas might have been highly rated, but Duran certainly wasn't at that point. And I think Bayo was like in the 20s, but it's like, they just had nothing in terms of like their top guys. They might have had like one top 100 guy, and it was like Michael Chavis at like 90. Like, you gotta have at all times at least a few guys that you can fall back on, because that's how, like, even from just like a depth standpoint, you at, like, we'll talk about the Dodgers tomorrow for our series preview. How have they been able to stay afoot with all of the pitching injuries they've had is because they always have more coming, and they just call guys up. It's just crazy. And that's where the Red Sox need to be. That's where they need to get the pitching to.
Yeah, it's all about I guess it's figuring out, as you said, the timing, but also the window. You know, with the Orioles, they're kind of in their first year of, like, their championship contenders. They're being thought of, at least from a preseason standpoint, for the World Series. The Sox are not there yet. And I agree with both of you that they will be in this scenario next year when it comes to the farm and the expectations, because now we're, as you said, 2 months in, and this team continues to be legitimate. So it's just all about finding that right window, and I firmly believe that window is going to be next year, where you then decide, big plunge, what do you do with your prospects? How long do you keep developing until you say, you know what, it's time to go for it? You know, until these guys are serious World Series contenders, because they can win in the playoffs, they can make a run, but they're not a definite yet. Like the Dodgers, a definite. Phillies, definite. So on and so on and so on. The Sox are not there yet, but they are pretty damn close.
Yeah, I think it all simmers down to you empty the clip, you make that, you go big game hunting when you are truly, you feel you are one piece away. For me personally, that's when you know Marcelo is going to be your starting shortstop. You go into a season with a healthy Story at second base. You have Teal behind the dish, and you need a fifth start, well, a five-man rotation, ideally an ace to go with Hauk. That, to me, is when you go. You fire out whatever it takes outside of the top three. Or, I mean, honestly, even if it does take one of the top three, because the outfield is still young and controlled right now. So if Roman's expandable, I love Roman Anthony. I do. I loved Yoan Moncada. If that's what it takes and you truly 100% believe you are one piece away, that is when you go. Not now. Not when you're opening this, oh, maybe we're in contention. Because by the time you're in that contending window, that guy has what, 1 year left, year and a half left on his deal? Not worth it right now.
Exactly. So that's going to lead me to my final question for you guys here. If you, because it's not going to be a one-for-one thing, but if you could trade one of the big three, and you can pick whichever one you want, for Garrett Crochet. So it's a big three guy and like maybe a couple other throw-ins. Would you do it? Today?
No.
Today, no.
Joe? I agree. I'm also a no. And so much of it has to do with the fact that he's probably going to be in the bullpen by the end of the year, or at least down the stretch. Like, he's perfect for a team that is so far in first place that they can afford to manage his innings and then throw him out there in the playoffs. Or for like a Dodgers team that needs a starting pitcher now while their guys get healthy, and then in September you can rest him. Whereas the Red Sox, like, as great as they've been, this is going to be a team that needs to fight tooth and nail for every single game every day. It's not going to be like 2018 where you can manage bodies so that they're ready to go in the postseason. Like, no, you got to get there. You got to get there. They haven't been there in a couple years. You got to make sure you're there. They have a two-game cushion. You can't get comfortable. So unfortunately, as much as awesome as Garrett Crochet is, like, why would you sacrifice a big, big piece of your future for a guy who can't even necessarily give you what you need this year? If it was Scooble, that might be a different story. But even then, it's like, why trade a big three guy when you could have the base fully set in stone, and then you're going to have hopefully other top 100 guys at that point that you can trade for a guy who at that point has 2.5 years of control, whereas by that point, Scooble will be an expiring. It's just, it's not exactly the right time to make the big splash, but the time is coming. It feels like they're right on track. It really does. I really don't know if there's much more I can say about how they have followed the path basically to a T since the moment they didn't trade Xander and Nate at the trade deadline in 2022.
Yeah, I think personally, a Crochet or a Scooble, like, that's the sexy trade. That's the one, you know, like, that's a big, like, oh, we're back. It's just not smart right now. What they should do right now is they have a very deep farm. They don't have as many 100 guys as they should or they will, but they have a lot of talent at the mid and lower level of the farm right now who are going to be 40, non-40 man and Rule 5 eligible. You package some of those guys up, you go get your Michael Lorenzen, your Sean Manaea, you go get that kind of guy while clearing out depth to be rosterly, financially smart. That's what you do this year, and you get your right-handed bat with something else.
That's what made Nick York so appealing in our last conversation, was because he was on fire, but he's also one of those guys where you need to make a decision on bringing him up or not.
Exactly. Yeah. He is a guy who today you can say this guy is blocked and his value is as high as it's going to be. That's why he's such a pristine trade candidate. Whereas like none of the big three are blocked and none of the guys in the lower minors, like we're talking about the Cespedes and the Blaze type of guys, like those guys' values should get higher. So it's like it'd be a little bit weird to sell now, especially when teams are so hesitant to trade for low minors guys because the bust potential is still so real with such young players, guys who are either in their late teens or early 20s, like very early 20s, like just turning 20. So yeah, guy like York, that's why he keeps coming up in our Who Says No stuff. It's not against Nick York. And like, as Pat said before, Baseball America says that he is seems to have rediscovered what initially had him in top 100 lists. And we'll see if he reappears on any top 100 lists in the middle of the season and whether or not he's on the Red Sox when he's on those lists, if he's on those lists. But before we get out of here today, do we have any enough said from you guys? I've got a note, but I'll wait for mine if you guys have anything.
I can go. I am not even on board. I am conducting the Pete Alonso hate train.
Why is that?
I am not a fan of Pete Alonso whatsoever. I think he's corny. I think he's incredibly, like, way too full of himself. I just don't like Pete Alonso. And there was a rumor, I don't know if it's true, I would be willing to bet it was, he told MLB he would not do the home run derby unless he was an all-star. So guys like Lindor and Nimmo, who have had far better seasons than Pete Alonso, were not all-stars. So they could have the two-time champ come back and he put out that effort. I'm just not an Alonso guy. I'm not.
I thought it was kind of a low blow too, because like I know he wasn't directly trying to like keep Lindor and Nimmo out.
Yeah,
obviously, but that's what happened. That's what happened. I hated the whole holding the MLB by the balls and saying like I won't do the derby. You need me, so make me an all. Like, it's just kind of bullshit. Like, if you want to be an all star, play better. He hasn't had that good of a first half. Like, congrats, you got it, but like at what cost? Like, yeah, it was just a little bit sleazy. But Joe, you got anything for us?
Yeah, I'm going to stick it with the All-Stars because I feel like there were a lot of highlights, but there was one huge low light that we all talked about before that home run derby. Ingrid Andress is a rising star in the country music scene, but I am now fully convinced. I wasn't convinced maybe 24 or 48 hours afterwards, but now I will say that that was the worst rendition of the national anthem I think I've ever heard. And I hate saying it because, you know, I'm a country music guy. I like music and I don't want to, you know, make light of the situation that she's in, because she did say on Instagram, like, she was drunk and she's going to rehab. I mean, the end of the note was a little bit weird. Saying that rehab sounds like fun is kind of sketchy, but I'm now convinced, you know, whether there was drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, because I was arguing for Fergie back in 2018. That one was horrible, but I think this one takes the cake now. I'm fully convinced now Ingrid Andress owns the worst anthem of all time.
Here's the one thing that the Fergie anthem had that this one didn't, was that the NBA players couldn't contain themselves and they were all just outwardly laughing. Whereas the home run derby participants, like, they kept it together pretty good. Like, someone tried to like make a Bohm, he didn't even do that much. He was just kind of like he like glanced. Whereas like Blake Griffin was just like howling. Like, Draymond Green was like, what the fuck is this shit? Yeah. Like, that's the one thing.
Yeah, I don't. The argument that Fergie I was making.
Do we think Fergie was drunk in 2018?
I never. That was my argument. That was my argument for why Fergie was worse, because that was sober and on purpose. She thought that rendition was a good idea.
Yeah, I think me and my brother were talking about this. I think it's very 50-50. The difference in the two is the Fergie one, the lows of it are so incredibly low and so bad that there's some like average parts to it. The Derby one was just consistently ass. So whichever one you think makes for a worse anthem, that's your winner. But that's the difference for me.
I thought it was fantastic. I love a good bad anthem. I was just having a conversation and then I heard like that and I just turned the TV up. I was like, oh, here we go. But I'll give you mine. All right. Mine's just a little story. I was out to dinner with my fiance and my mom last night. And it was at this like kind of this Irish place, and like they often have like open mic night. We didn't know whether or not there was an open mic night or something, but towards the end of our dinner, they had open mic, but it was for stand-up comedy. And so I'm sitting there with my mother, and the guys up there start like making like a bunch of like jerk off jokes. Like it's like I'm just like sitting there with my mom, and like it's all very funny. Like they're making like a bunch of like sexual jokes, and it's just like I just don't like have like the I have a great relationship with both of my parents, but like I certainly don't have like the level of like I don't talk about like sex stuff with my mom. I just don't. And they're making all these jokes, and then the third guy goes up there. He grabs the mic, grabs it. So I fucked my third cousin. I was just at that point I couldn't hold it in. This is the funniest. I have not laughed that hard. The guy probably thought I was laughing at his joke, but I was just laughing because my mom is just sitting there, jaws on the floor. The joke was he fucked his third cousin, aka like not like his third cousin, but it was like he's done it three times. That was the joke he was trying to make. But yeah, just an all out wacky night with my mom and that kind of humor. It was great. Yeah, that's all I got for you guys.
Great night for you. Awkward night for the two of them.
Yeah, great night for my mom. Great night for my mom. One that neither of us will ever forget. It was a great time. Any final notes before we wrap this baby up?
Nope.
Tell me when that open mic is so I can attend it too.
You know, they have like musical open mic nights if you want to show us.
No free advertisement, but where'd you go?
Bebop at
Oh yeah, I've been there. Yeah,
great restaurant, but yeah. Avoid the comedy nights with your parents. I will say that. But appreciate you guys tuning in. Episode 98 of Play Testy. Before you do something else, hit the subscribe button. Whether you're listening on the Odyssey app, Apple, or Spotify, rate us 5 stars. Helps us out a ton. Check us out on YouTube. We're on the WEI channel. We've got a Play Testy playlist. Hit the thumbs up on those videos. And you can also find us on the socials at Play Testy on both Twitter and Instagram. Joe has been cooking up some awesome stuff for the socials, so I highly recommend that you follow us there. We've got another one dropping for you tomorrow. We will preview the Sox-Dodgers series, the big bad Dodgers, Shohei Ohtani in LA. Sox are going to take him on. We'll see if the heat can carry over from the break. But till tomorrow, we'll be back in yours again. But till then, this has been episode 98 of Play Tessie. For Joe, for Pat, it's been Gordo here. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.